The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
We got a whole heck of a lot going here on a Wednesday. It is signing day, ASU coaching news, the Dodgers made a huge trade. Also, you know, NHL, NBA, things are going on. Jordan Hamm, Devin Henry here, holding it down on the Brad Sesmatt Show. And I think the news of the day and the thing I'm going to be most interested in moving forward, obviously signing day, love this day, love the day in December as well. A lot of guys putting pen to paper, making it official, going to the next level. I was out at Chandler High School earlier today. We're going to go heavy in recruiting here in a little bit. But later today, ASU will be holding their press conference for their late signees, as well as now they can talk about the All-Americans who signed in early signing day, but they were keeping that hush-hush until they could make those announcements at their games. But now Tony White, defensive coordinator for a month, 2 weeks, he is now out. He is headed to Syracuse to be the defensive coordinator over there. He cited his mom is on the East Coast. She is a bit older. It's been more and more difficult to see her consistently. But I think also a big factor certainly has to be the financials of it, and probably the opportunity. Dino Babers has turned around a program that hasn't been good for a long time. And if you attach your name to that, have some success, all of a sudden, you could be getting a head coaching job just in a couple of years, if that.
And I know the ASU community was really excited about potentially getting this a new defensive coordinator in here and really liked Coach White. But for him personally, I think that this is a great gig for him to be able to go back east, be with his family. I know that there's a couple of people when news broke and they're like, I can't believe this. This is crazy. Why would he leave? But this is, I mean, I can't think of a better reason to go and move on and do something else, unfortunately, after that much time. And then the concern, of course, for ASU is we're in February.
Right.
And you don't have a DC anymore. So, naturally, it's a little bit of a concern. And then I'm sure both sides are going, I wish we would have known that job would have been open and you were going to go get it. And now ASU is kind of in the back end of trying to find a quality defensive coordinator when we're at the start of February already.
Right. And as it stands right now, there are co-defensive coordinators already on the staff, Antonio Pierce and Marvin Lewis. But from all indications, and look, I'm not in the weeds with the program as much as a Chris Cartman or some of those guys that really have that intel. But it felt like Marvin Lewis was very content being an analyst, helping out, being kind of that co-head coach without some of maybe the other responsibilities. And then you go to Antonio Pierce. He now has like four job titles. So where is the give? Where is the take? Where does the defense go now? Because Tony White's really the last of the 3-3-5 crew. And they can, Chris Cartman pointed this out in one of his articles, they've shown they can go a more standard defense. So I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue. But now moving forward, you know, what does that defensive staff look like? They still have to replace Jamar Cain, the defensive line coach who left for Oklahoma. So a lot going on here. And I know I've seen a lot of people, and this is also kicking off our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. As we dive deeper into this topic with ASU, I've seen a lot of people say one of the big reasons Todd Graham was hired was because, or fired, was because he couldn't retain assistant coaches. Yes, there has been a lot of turnover under Herm Edwards as well. Part of that is him firing three offensive assistants, not so much them moving on. But I also think Ray Anderson put an incredibly high standard out there. And I think he was trying to make a statement when they fired Todd Graham that they had to hang on to those assistant coaches. They wouldn't settle for 7-5, 8-4-ish, 8-5s anymore, which is where ASU has been. But can you honestly look anyone in the eye and say that ASU isn't further ahead than where they were a couple of years ago? Like, yes, those pieces of criteria, yes, it doesn't match up to, I think, pretty unrealistic things and put a tough position for Herm Edwards, at least in his first 2 years. But I think the program is so much further along than where it was just a couple of years ago.
And this isn't just wasn't able to hold on to
a defensive coordinator. This was someone making a life decision for his family. It's not like someone was like, oh, man, not sticking with Herm. I don't like the plan. There's something wrong here. We're not getting recruits because it's all the opposite of that. And the fact that there are co-defensive coordinators ready to go, I don't think that, like you mentioned, I don't think that there's going to be a major change in what the defense was supposed to look like anyway. And, of course, the recruits are in. Like, the game plan's already there for the most part. It's just a matter of now adapting to the situation that you got put into. But, yeah, the program is definitely in a better spot. You look at just the overall record. You look at the standings in the Pac-12. You look at the Territorial Cup wins. And you look at the bowl game wins. So far, that's what Herm Edwards has had. And this is what you want to build upon for the rest of your future.
And another thing, I think, to take into account is in certain key positions, the cupboard had been bare. And ASU is starting to clean that up a little bit, specifically along the offensive line. There were some classes where it was very weak on the offensive line. The classes coming in, now those what were recruits are now supposed to be juniors and seniors, and that's why we're seeing depth issues. And that's one of the things that they're targeting here today. And I'm, like I said, later they'll be talking to the press. I'm going to be there. And that's going to be one of the things. Kellen Deesh, Texas A&M, grad transfer, is already signed with ASU, already on campus, and Henry Hattis. I don't know if they'll it's always interesting with the compliance and what coaches can and can't talk about. I'm not entirely sure they can talk about Henry Hattis today, because transfers usually work a little bit differently. But typically, once you get pen to paper, they can start talking about them, start tweeting about them. You'll see all the vignettes and all that stuff. But it should be a pretty small class. ASU got most of their stuff done here in December, but looks like they already have signed Jake Ray, a tight end. We'll see how he fits into Zach Hill's system, where they utilize the tight end a lot. And then Daylon McElmore, the quarterback, says he has signed. I haven't seen official word from ASU yet, but really with the transfers and then those two, that's kind of wrapping up. There wasn't going to be a lot of potential surprises, I feel like, with ASU. Let's shift gears over to the MLB, and we've seen the Diamondbacks have a very good offseason, bring in a lot of quality players, and I think they're taking multiple steps ahead. But when you live in a world in a division with the LA Dodgers, this is always on the horizon, potentially. Mookie Betts and David Price headed from the Red Sox to the Dodgers. And really, in my mind, I don't think that the Dodgers really gave up that much. It's a package that includes outfielder Alex Verdugo from Tucson, a very highly touted prospect, and I think going to be a very good everyday player. But Mookie Betts is a top five player in the entire league, and I think is just hitting his prime now. David Price has not been very good. He is very expensive. I think that was one of the pieces that was, all right, you're going to take one of the top five players. You also got to take this monstrosity of a contract with you. But one thing about baseball is it's not a hard cap. Like, yes, there are luxury taxes and things like that, but it's not like the NFL where you have to get under that number, or like no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, there is flexibility, and Boston is one of those teams that can usually absorb bad contracts. The problem is with Boston, they have three or four bad contracts for old players right now. But if this happens to Oakland, if this happens to Kansas City, if this happens to the Diamondbacks, this gets GMs and managers fired. The Red Sox can just absorb it by trading one of the best players in baseball, but just ho-hum, and they'll probably be back in a playoff race here in a year or two.
And you know that a team won a trade when the tweet only says what that team got. Doesn't say a word about what the Dodgers traded away. That was my first question. I was like, hey, did the Dodgers lose Kershaw? Like, where? Like, that's a big package right there. And, I mean, even Price, that's still another piece of your pitching rotation that you can move around and have more of a consistent rotation, adding more and more names. And it hurts so bad when the D-backs get Mass and Bumgarner, and that just – the fans rejoiced on social media and around everywhere, and you're like, dang, this is a game changer. And then the Dodgers get Mookie Betts, and David Price. And,
and like you said, they didn't give up a Bellinger. They didn't give up a Kershaw, a Justin Turner. Again, Alex Verdugo, I think, is going to be a very good player. But every year for the past 8 years, it's been, here's this highly touted prospect coming up for the Dodgers. Yeah, he's going to change the game. That's what Bellinger was. That's what Corey Seager was. That's what Clayton Kershaw was quite a few years ago. That I think it's an easier pill to swallow if it's, you know, Alex Verdugo the past couple of years. He's been kind of that 20th to like 27th player on the roster where he may get called down to AAA, spend some time up in the big leagues. Again, any other team, he's an everyday outfielder. And that's what he's going to be for the Red Sox. But it's when you have, when you're surrounded by that talent. We heard it from Mike Hazen when they traded for Starling Marte. They gave up some really good prospects, but he's like, we had depth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as bad to do this when you know you have three or four guys that can probably accomplish the same thing. I feel like that's where the Dodgers are now, and now they have another, you know, you pair that outfield with Betts and Bellinger. Like, that's, those are two of the best players in baseball.
And you trade away a talented prospect, and what did you get in return? Straight up talent.
Yeah.
You just
proven talent.
Proven straight up talent that immediately makes the team better. When you look at a trade, that's what you want. And fans don't necessarily care about the numbers until, you know, you need to sign someone else. But that's not right now, right?
Right.
Right now, the Dodgers, in this incredible span they're having another offseason where they're going win now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any other team in baseball has had so many consecutive years of, okay, we're in win now mode.
Right.
Coming into the offseason. And once again, they make a trade for that. And then my question is, okay, is Boston stepping back? Are they saying, okay, I think
they have to.
We're relieving some money. We're going to take a couple of years to try to get back to the World Series. And then that makes me more disappointed that J.D. Martinez is on the Red Sox.
That's not a bad point. Yeah, and he's hitting the market here pretty soon as well. So definitely and that, again, I've talked about it a lot, but that makes you appreciate what Mike Hazen has been able to accomplish here, where they had a bottom third prospects field. They were cash strapped. They were so handcuffed. And he was able to quote unquote rebuild with a team. And the first 3 years, it was late September and they were still in it. Like, to rebuild and stay competitive is so difficult in so many sports. I think baseball might be the toughest. And they were able to accomplish that. And now we're starting to see the fruits of that, where you have a pretty stacked minor league system. You now have players, controllable players, that can now you know, be multiple-year contributors for potential playoff teams over the years to come. So, but again, you have the big bad Dodgers coming in. They can swing those kind of deals. And again, it goes back to their farm system. They have that ammo that they can use. When you look at these teams and even the Yankees, it's, everyone says, oh, there's all this money. We can kind of buy those players. It's not necessarily that. It's that you can re-sign your really good players that come up through your system, because most of these guys are homegrown. And then you get an icing on the cake where you can pull the trigger and go get a Mookie Betts, go get some outside help, some hired guns. A lot going on. We're going to come back here in a little bit and talk about signing day, both locally, talked on ASU a little bit as well, and one interview that we have from a guy who gave his interview before the commitment, and he's headed to the SEC. So that's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm and Devin Henry here on signing day, late signing day, really since early signing day got introduced. This is, I think, the third cycle that they've been doing it, where it's in mid to late December. Honestly, like 75% of the guys sign then. Usually if they either A, have been recruited pretty heavily, or B, have been committed, like, they're just going to sign it there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't good players that were left on the board. And a lot of these guys, I think, are really underrated players. Let's just take a look at what some of the top guys that were remaining in the state of Arizona. You had Tate Romney, the Chandler linebacker, Darvon Hubbard, running back over at Willow Canyon, especially with Tate. Some of these guys are juggling whether they're going to do, you know, missions after college. In this case, Tate is going to take a two-year LDS mission, and he still had like 16 offers. I think if he was going to go a different route and not do that, those offers probably would have been about double, but that was very important to him, and I respect the hell out of him for doing it. We've seen guys come back from missions of varying degrees of in shape, but I think that he can be one that comes back and really does really well. So he's committed now to BYU. Darvon Hubbard committed to Texas A&M. Andrew Roomery on the west side. Valley Vista offensive tackle goes to UC Davis. He had offers from U of A, Iowa State, other Power Fives. Alex Lines, tight end over at Higley. Really good blocking tight end. Also can be a force in the passing game. Had the likes of the Oregon States and the Utahs and University of Arizona, I believe, Boise State. He ends up going UNLV. They have a new staff over there. They're also going to be playing in the Raiders Stadium. So I think that's a pretty good recruiting pitch and brand new facilities as well.
Supposedly, because there's all the – now there's the issue. So ASU won't play there now or something like that and legal stuff and whatnot. But
that's just one game. But
that is just one game. But slippery slope. No.
Yeah, there's been some confusion with that.
Yeah, a little bit. But nonetheless, the way that Arizona has blown up in the past few years is – well, I guess first of all deserving, but second of all, it's just been really intriguing. Growing up, going to high school just feels like a few years ago. I went to Cactus. You didn't hear about this. This didn't happen. I mean, especially on the west side, even more so, places like Willow Canyon doesn't get a D1 commit anywhere or anything like that.
Let alone far SEC. Out west.
Power Five. Yeah. You know, that never happened until about a few years ago, including even with powerhouses like Centennial and other programs like that. And when it comes to these signing days, obviously, the first signing day is the one where, like you said, Jordan, you get a lot of the superstars, if you will, coming out of schools across the nation. I don't love having that first signing day because schools have the power to say, we're going to pull your offer if you do not get to us by a certain deadline, being that first signing day. But then looking back at the schools, that's also something where recruiting-wise, they need to know, how many linebackers do I have on this roster?
Right.
How many D-backs? How many running backs do I have on my roster right now? But for some kids, having that pressure of, I need to know where I'm going to college by December, between, who knows, 20 schools, 3 schools, whatever.
Right.
You can't visit every single campus every single time. You still have your academics to focus on because that is a major part of recruiting still. You know, it's kind of a toss-up to me about that first signing day, but it benefits both sides, but there is both ways that both the athlete and the school can kind of mix things around so they get what they want, and one side feels slighted.
See, this is why I like the early signing day, because it's not like, yes, you have a hard and fast day now where it's like, okay, if you don't commit, like, yeah, there's a possibility your spot might get filled up. That happens every single year.
Yeah.
But I also know of schools that did that of, if you don't commit by July 1st, we're going to have to move on from you.
Yeah, like, even when like it's that, not signing day, there's still a deadline.
With a lot of these offers, it's, hey, we got to know by this date or whatever. And the other thing that I like is it slides the calendar up so guys can take official visits over the summer now. So they don't necessarily have to juggle with that. It's not perfect. It's not. And
there's
there,
pros and cons.
There are guys, and you know, we're both kind of in the weeds on this. So we hear the great stories, and we also hear the stories of the kid that's overwhelmed and doesn't know where to go and is feeling pressure from all these and, you know, says he's going to go to one spot and then another coach won't take no for an answer. And, you know, it's the way it's been described to me by a lot of different parents is it is hectic blessings. It's like they get caught up, you know, kind of telling me some of the things of just like how stressful it can be and everything like that. And yes, of course, like this is a life-changing decision, but then they always stop themselves and go, I mean, it's all good stuff. And it's like, no, it can still be stressful. It can be great stuff and stressful. Like, that's what most of life is. The best stuff
is stressful.
So, but it's always a strange tightrope walk with some of these guys. A couple other names that jumped out to me, like I said, Nehemiah Magalai, offensive tackle for Chandler, one of the best linemen in the entire state, going to NAU. NAU's getting an absolute steal in him. It sounds like, I was talking to Garrettson this morning, it sounds like he's going to be playing on the defensive line because they have a hole there, and they think that he can really kind of be really productive there. And then Cam Nash. Cam Nash, Danny Rivera, two of the Saguaro defensive backs. Cam's headed to Army. Danny is headed to, he's taking a preferred walk-on at Washington. And the cool thing about this, I think, is Keely Ringo, Jacoby Covington got a lot of love, and deservedly so. Like, these are two of the best guys to ever come through Arizona. But these two guys were absolute ball players, too. And the thing I love about Cam is not a big guy. He is a pretty undersized defensive back. But that didn't stop him going up against a tight end that is going D1, a Pac-12 wide receiver, playing really well. And every single time that play was over, he was putting his face mask in the other guy. Like, he was not afraid. He has a ton of confidence. I think he's going to do really well at Army. Also has like a 4.7 GPA or something like that. So like, dude just gets it done. And same goes for Danny. Everything I heard when he committed from his teammates was just like, this is the smartest football player I've ever been with, like schematically wise and all of that. So maybe he, you know, goes on the scout team at Washington, can earn himself a scholarship, and then, you know, who the heck knows? They've had a lot of success with that. So those were two. And then Brock Lane, Hunter Scott over at Perry. Brock is headed to Utah State. Hunter Scott to Weber State. Perry, it's been interesting. Past couple of years, right around December 1st, middle of November, that's when guys start to blow up at Perry. And Chuba Purdy's the exception to the rule. He's the one that got everything kind of early. But Brock didn't get his first D1 offer until, like, December 15th. You look at Kyle Patterson, who had offers but really blew up, you know, right around state championship time a couple years ago, where he got Washington, he got Alabama. He ended up going to Air Force, which was also just a wild story. And now you have Brock and Hunter Scott. These guys, 75% of their offers came after November 15th, and these are two really good players as well. So pretty cool. Hubbard heading to Texas A&M. So he started in Ohio and moved to Arizona. He knew a couple of guys when he was out there. One of them was Jack Miller. They did an Ohio State camp together, and that's where they met. And that was one of the reasons he ended up starting at Chaparral. Now his family moved to Surprise. So that's 40 miles one way. And one thing he told me, it's not in the video, it's in the written piece, which is on sports360az.com. He said there were times where it would be like, Shap would decide to do like 6 a.m. practices. He's like, we were leaving at 3 a.m. to get out there. Like, the amount of sacrifices he made, his family made to make this happen. So he's over there, commits to Ohio State. Urban Meyer leaves. He then decides to reopen things. And senior year was just like, look, whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen. He goes back to Willow Canyon, so he's in Surprise, closer to home, so his family can see him play more. Had a really good year, was injured a little bit, but had like 700 rushing yards, like 350 receiving yards, about 12 touchdowns. Really slimmed down as well. If you see some of the older footage, he was kind of like a bigger, bulkier back that just wanted to run through you. He ran track, kind of cut down, he said like 20 pounds, and you can kind of see it. And now he's heading to Texas A&M, which is pretty cool. So,
and that's just a great story, because guys don't come out of Surprise or the Dysart District or the Peoria District, right, or the Glendale District. So I don't even want to say some West Valley love, just talent over on the West Valley.
Yeah.
Came to the East Valley and got noticed. But nonetheless, you know, I would like to see Willow Canyon a little bit more competitive and get some of those further out. There's some very far West Valley schools, Goodyear, Avondale, Surprise, El Mirage, out there way on the outskirts of the valley that are trying to kind of pick up their own program. La Jolla is doing a great job about that. Mm-hmm. They're really growing over on that end. Of course, we all know about Desert Edge out in Goodyear. So.
Right. And I think it helps with these showcases that everyone's doing in May. Yep. There's a West Side showcase that they do now where it's like all of these schools. And yes, you with these showcases, a lot of times what is helpful is you have one big fish that a bunch of coaches go to see, and then it's, hey, I'm just going to go check out these other rosters. And then stuff can creep through. So Desert Edge, I think, kind of serves as that big fish for some of those schools that may not have had much recruiting attention. I think that, you know, played a little bit of a role with Andrew Roomery in Valley Vista, getting some eyeballs on him. Like I said, he had offers from Power Five, from a bunch of Mountain West schools and things like that. But the dynamics of it is always really interesting. But we saw Jace Taylor from Lake Havasu.
Yeah.
He's heading to New Mexico. Regan Terry from Florence is going to U of A. Josh Mangan from Florence is going to NAU. These are not schools we usually talk about.
Those are out there. Lake Havasu, okay, so I do a lot of West Valley stuff. Lake Havasu has been in the West Valley region for whatever reason.
Yeah.
What is that, a three-hour drive? And so I've got to see them in person. But it's like schools like that, they don't get the attention ever, period, because no one goes out there, especially schools like Florence and even to a lesser extent Lake Havasu. Very small enrollment numbers, so very small sample size. And so those are some of my favorite stories that come out of signing days and out of recruitment stories. Those guys who shouldn't be getting offers being Power Five commits.
Yeah. And that was the case totally with Regan Terry, a guy, you know, everybody always kind of says like, oh, well, 3A football, I don't know. Like, he's got to dominate. Like, what's going on? And then you watch him for a little bit and it's like, yeah, this is a really good player that I think with the right coaching can really get developed. So we've seen quite a few of those, and we've seen Tucson blow up, which is pretty cool as well. Coming up next, Devin Henry, racing segment. Here we go, sport of speed. I'm just going to get out of the way because I'll get run over. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show.
Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. It's still not Brad Sussmat here. Devin Henry here with Sports 360 AZ. And I get to talk to you guys about NASCAR. And I know exactly what you're thinking. Devin, I don't care. Okay, here's why you should care. So I know it's February. Daytona 500 coming up two Sundays from now. They're running the Clash this week. Be sure to keep it. Keep an eye out on the website. Going to have some stuff coming out this week on the NASCAR season. The important part about this season, it's not called this. I think it sounds really cool, though, so I'm calling it this. The Desert 4 Crown Championships at Phoenix Raceway, November 6th, 7th, and 8th. NASCAR's championships, for the first time since 2001, will not be at Homestead Miami Speedway. It's going to be right here in the Valley. And you already know we have the Super Bowl coming up. We have Final Four coming up. You got a couple other things coming up. And then, of course, always got PGA coming here, so on and so forth. So the Super Bowl, Final Four, National Championship game, for football, college football, national championship. That only comes once every decade or more so. If this goes really well, the NASCAR Championship at Phoenix Raceway, if this goes really well, it's going to be here for a long time. Homestead Miami Speedway had the championship race for 17 straight years. If this race goes well at Phoenix Raceway on November 8th, there could be a major sports championship event in the Valley every single year for the next decade. This is a one-year deal, having the championship at Phoenix Raceway. It's at the end of the playoffs. For those of you guys who don't know how the NASCAR playoff works, if you've seen Disney Pixar Cars, you got a pretty good sense of it, of the championship, at least that is. So they've created a playoff system. So the final 10 races of the year, the way I compare it is if you've ever been to the arcade and you play like one of the weird racing games and you have to get to a checkpoint by a certain time, it's kind of like that. After three races, the four guys with the least amount of points are eliminated. So it goes from 16 to 12. Points reset. You go three races, the bottom four are removed again. Once again, eliminated. You didn't get to your checkpoint in time, whatever helps you think about it. Down to eight. Three more races. Four more are gone, so there's four left after nine races. That 10th race of the championship, points are completely reset. There's no bonus points. There's no nothing. It's those last four cars racing the other 36 cars on the track. Whoever finishes in front of the other three win the championship. That's it. That'll be the championship at Phoenix Raceway on November 8th. Last year, there were some difficulties. The short track racing package just wasn't that good, quite frankly. There wasn't a lot of passing. With not a lot of excitement, they added traction compound to the top of the track at Phoenix Raceway, which was only utilized by lap cars to get out of the way. But if the fans show up to any race, there's going to be four championship races. The ARCA West Series, the Gander RV and Outdoor Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series will all have their championship races at Phoenix Raceway Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. if this goes over well, Phoenix will host the Valley. It's in Avondale. The Valley will host a major sports championship many years forward. What they're doing next year is the NASCAR 30-week race schedule is going to be completely changed. There's going to be tracks removed. There's going to be tracks getting one of their two races taken away. There's going to be new tracks added in. There's going to be road courses added in more than likely. There's going to be new short tracks or old short tracks that were no longer on the schedule added in as well. And so the process of where the championship race is going to be is completely unknown. We don't know where that's going to happen at in 2021. What we do know, though, is that the championship for NASCAR for all four series is going to be right here at ISM Raceway, fresh off of 100—Phoenix Raceway, after $178 million in renovations just a couple years ago. And so, it says ISM Raceway. That's why I messed it up. I need to get some new pictures. But there's an opportunity here where having the Super Bowl or the Final Four or the College Football National Championship the same year as or 3 to 4 months after the NASCAR Championship in the Valley. There's an opportunity for that here. An incredible opportunity for the Valley to gain even more exposure where you have the NASCAR Championship in November and the Super Bowl in February just after that or the Final Four in April, just 6 months after that. So, more opportunities for the Valleys, more opportunities for the residents of the West Valley and Phoenix to get out to a championship event, even if it's not the Cup Series. Maybe it's the Xfinity Series Championship and the ARCA West Championship that you go to on Saturday. You buy an infield pass and you hang out there all day, have a margarita, whatever. So, a major change in the Valley potentially next year. We know that we get this championship for 1 year. So it's important that we try to get it right. And to make it even better, for the first time since 2001, NASCAR will visit the championship racetrack earlier in the year. When they were doing the championship at Homestead from 2002 to 2019, they only went to Homestead for the championship. Now, though, at Phoenix, we have the Ticket Guardian 500 on March 6th, 7th, and 8th. It's a championship preview with the new rules package and the track and the drivers to figure out what notes you need to have if you're one of the lucky four at the end of the year. So that's going to make the FanShield 500 Speedfest weekend even more important than ever. It makes this spring race that NASCAR gave Phoenix a little over a decade ago, it's able to make that a really big event. I'm excited for it. Hopefully that kind of gave you some insight as to why maybe if you're not excited about it, you know how big it is for the state of Arizona and for the Valley moving forward. If Phoenix can keep the championship race past 2020 and be able to bundle it up just at State Farm Stadium, just down the 101 and the I-10 away when they have the Final Four in the Super Bowl. Big things potentially on the horizon. Thank you to Jordan Hamm for hosting, you know, holding the MLB and the recruiting part of the show. He does such a great job at that. Of course, he has the Diamonds in the Desert podcast on Sports 360 AZ. And naturally, just like any signing day, today there's going to be a ton of pieces and throughout the week on some of these major recruits that have just made their final decision today and yesterday for what colleges that they're going to continue their academic and athletic careers. So Jordan does a phenomenal job at recruiting. He's one of the best in the state. I guess the segment needs to be over now. Be sure to check out his content on sports360az.com. I have some NASCAR stuff coming up, some headlines looking into the season. It's short, it's painless. I got you guys. I know what you want. If I don't know what you want, tweet me what you want from NASCAR, whether it gets you excited or just informs you a little bit more about what's going on. But that's the Brad Sesmatch show today. Brad and Eric are back tomorrow. Until then, though, you just get stuck with me and Jordan on these Wednesdays. For now, though, we'll see you next time. Sports 360 AZ is the site. We'll see you next time.